From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Earlier this year, we got a voicemail from a longtime listener.
My name is Lloyd Randall. I'm calling from Danville, Illinois.
You might recognize Lloyd from Danville as a frequent contributor to our text message group.
I am a 70-year-old African-American. I've been involved in my community for over 50 years.
Including as an alderman, and he had a question for us.
How does someone get an opportunity to sit next to you guys during your broadcast to share their views?
Lloyd wanted to talk about racism, specifically racial disparities in traffic stops between black people and white people in Danville. Now, that voicemail came back in February, and Lloyd and I spoke by phone not long after that, but as happens in a busy news year, the story fell off our radar until a few weeks ago when Lloyd reached out again via text message. This time, we looked into the data from the Illinois Traffic and Pedestrian Stop Study, and indeed, the share of black drivers in Danville stopped by the police has increased. It was 35% in 2004 and 58% of stops last year. And here's some context. According to the same study, black people represent just 20% of Danville's population. I'm going to say that again. Black people are 20% of Danville's population and 58% of the traffic stops. So, with that, Lloyd Randall, you got our attention. Welcome to the 21st show. Lloyd, are you with us?
Yes.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. And I'm going to invite listeners to join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Lloyd, let's put the numbers and statistics to the side for a moment. What have you seen and experienced in Danville?
Well, typically what we see on a pretty regular basis is that law enforcement tends to stop African-American drivers based on pretext. Now, pretext is something that law enforcement doesn't like to talk about because when you look at the Illinois Vehicle Code, under the guise of public safety, they're using pretext traffic stops to basically identify what they consider people of interest or people that are a threat to society. And then using pretext is something that's gone on all over the country. And many of us know that pretext traffic stops are actually being eliminated around the country because it doesn't add any real service to policing in communities, and it definitely does not make communities safer.
What's a pretext? Give us an example.
So a pretext traffic stop is something that I got a call about a month ago. A young teenage kid working at a car wash was leaving work. And most people don't know that you have to use your turn signal 100 feet from an intersection. That is a pretext traffic stop. Or if you don't use a turn signal, that's a pretext traffic stop. And that gives law enforcement the opportunity to delve deep into your personal life. So these are the type of tactics that are being used when you look at that 58% based on the percentage of the driving population of African Americans in Danville.
What are the consequences of this? What do you hear from people who've experienced these stops?
Well, it's really interesting because the impact is financial. The impact is psychological. There's a huge social impact. And imagine that you are a person who is at risk financially. Let's say that you are at or below the poverty line. If you get multiple tickets based on a pretext traffic stop, you've got to make some serious decisions about whether or not you can afford to pay that. And let's say that you don't pay one of them, then it jeopardizes your ability to drive because then your license are revoked. And if you have small children or if an older member of your family relies on you for transportation, then you simply cannot move about the community in the normal way that most citizens do.
I want to delve a little deeper into the numbers. So I mentioned some of the statistics. We'll just do the population bit. And I should say the population numbers, these are not census numbers. The way the traffic stop study does it is based on crash data, I gather. So I guess they estimate the number of drivers based on what share of people of various racial or ethnic backgrounds are involved in crashes in the area. And by that metric, white drivers, 73% in Danville, black drivers, 20%, Hispanic, 5.5%, and then smaller shares for Asian, American Indian, as it's classified here, or Native Hawaiian. Apparently 11 crashes from Native Hawaiians in Danville in the last year. But the big numbers there, 73% white, 20% black. But you look at traffic stops, 39% white, 58% black. Talk about your, you know, examination of these numbers over the years.
So what we know is that, let's look at a year like 2003, for an example, or I'm sorry, 2021, there were 1,056 African-American drivers stopped on the streets of Danville, Illinois, compared to 622 white drivers. So when you go back to looking at the percentage of the driving population, that's where the true disparity comes in. So when you look at whether or not officers are stopping people in what we call more populated areas, which are the areas that are in the north end of the community where predominantly white drivers drive, the numbers are skewed because you don't see the percentage of white drivers being stopped, fined, ticketed, even having their cars searched by dogs that you do with African-American drivers or persons of color. That's why the numbers that you guys are looking at is such a disparity based on, again, the percentage of the driving population. And I want to remind the public that if it weren't for the 2003 legislation signed by then Senator Barack Obama in the state of Illinois that made it a state law for all law enforcement agencies to report these stops into a database, we wouldn't really know. And incidentally, we now see practices by local law enforcement where they're actually stopping local drivers, but they're not entering that information into a database. And there should be a reason for law enforcement to log this stop through something called a stop card. The stop card simply suggests that their law enforcement made contact with an individual in the event that something were to come up later on. But again, back to the percentage of the driving population.
Well, let me interrupt you there, because that's a pretty serious allegation. If you say law enforcement in Danville is not complying with the requirements of this law and recording their stops, what evidence do you have for that?
Well, the evidence is from the individuals that are actually being stopped. Someone was stopped. They were searched. They didn't find anything in their automobile, and that wasn't enough for the law enforcement officer, so he actually called in a canine officer. The canine officer went through the gentleman's vehicle, again, found nothing. There were no citations issued, and the person was allowed to simply leave the scene without any written or ticket that was applied to the stop. So we know that they're skewing the numbers because they're not actually completing the whole process. And when we actually have an opportunity to engage in dialogue with our local police authorities, they're suggesting that the statistician that compiled the data for the report that came out in Danville, which is the Mountain Whisper statistical data research firm out of Washington, they suggested that the population numbers were not correct and the numbers could not be as high as I'm suggesting that they are. But with your reporting, you've realized that there's 58%. Based on the 20% of the population of African Americans, and that's a staggering number for any community.
Yeah, you mentioned the authorities there, and this seems like a good time to mention that we emailed both the mayor and the police chief of Danville to invite them to join us today. We did not hear back. I regret we could not have a fuller conversation on that because of that. But Lloyd, let me ask you, what has been your experience with public officials and talking with them in Danville about this? And maybe we should mention even, you know, take a step back from that. What is your experience in government in Danville, right? You were a part of government there.
Well, let's go back even before that. Let's look at the fact that you have a private citizen who's asking a fair question of his local government. The question is whether or not, based on the percentage of the driving population, are African Americans being stopped more than other subgroups? Are they being ticketed? Are they being fined? Are they being harassed? So as a private citizen, I think that it's only fair that I go before my city and its representatives, ask the fair question of whether or not this is occurring, and then have them be responsible as a government to respond back with information. And that's what's not happened. We've gone before this council representing a 16-year combat Army Ranger who had been stopped 9 times in 5 years or 7 years. He'd been stopped 4 to 5 times prior to that. And basically what the city officials tried to do was to show every traffic stop before the city council to basically suggest that the gentleman wasn't having a problem with law enforcement, which we told them that was not the fact. The simple fact is that one private citizen was stopped 9 times by law enforcement to no avail. So we've had conversations. We went before the city council. We presented our case. We presented the statistical data based on self-reporting by the Danville Police Department into the IDOT database, and they simply don't want to touch the issue. And I think that it's two reasons why they don't want to confront this issue. Number one, they know that they are dead wrong about the traffic stops they're conducting. Number two, there's a huge economic impact to municipal governments who fail to recognize and address these issues. They simply don't want to hear it because the climate today is, well, it's Trump-style politics, right? It means that everything that is right is wrong, everything wrong is right. So they just don't want to hear the truth of the matter. And the only way that we're going to get to the bottom of this is what the city of Urbana did in 2015 with their traffic data reporting system. They actually did something that was, I thought, very, very genuine in terms of the consumer interest or the public interest. They actually organized a commission. All mayors have the right to form commissions under their direction. They formed the commission. They hired an independent firm who did a deep dive into the statistical data. And what did they find? Well, one gentleman said to me, much to my surprise, sir, and much to my dismay, we actually found out that we were profiling and being biased in our policing to citizens in Urbana. That report is the type of report that I've been requesting that the city of Danville, the mayor, the council simply refuse to participate in.
Why do you say that they, I mean, it's worth noting for those who are not familiar with the politics, we have listeners across Illinois, Urbana is a fairly well-known as a liberal city. They even had a socialist member of the city council for a time. They may still, I don't know. Danville, not so much, I gather. What have they been saying when you've been, you know, pushing for this sort of independent review?
Well, I've had three public meetings in conjunction with the ACLU. I've actually reached out to Kwame Raoul's organization. We now have the interest of the Illinois Criminal Justice Authority on our team, who is now looking at the ways that they can do a deep dive into this matter. But the fact of the matter is this: responsible citizens who come forward with a legitimate question or concern, and I'll give you an example. Let's say that you have a problem with your sewer. Well, the people that are responsible for that are dispatched to come out and talk to you and figure out whether or not there is a problem, whether it be for you as a private homeowner or if it's on the city side. So it's a simple question, a fair question by private citizens, and my government is simply not being responsible by responding to my request, nor are they willing to allow for a deep dive into the information, because I think that at the end of the day, what you're going to realize is that not only they're biased, it's really racist police practices that are allowing for these things to happen. And again, there's an impact financially, there's a psychological impact, there's a social impact. And of course, everybody wants to embrace law enforcement because we're in a very challenging time now. So we want to work with our law enforcement community. This agency simply refuses. The mayor, who is the head of the police agency, is simply refusing to participate. Everyone along the chain of command, all the aldermen who represent the city of Danville. We have a 7-ward aldermatic form of government, and each one of these aldermen has as their constituency someone who is possibly affected by this over-policing. I call it over-policing because you cannot allow for 20% of your population to simply be targeted by law enforcement and be stopped 58% of all the stops in your community. So it's really a telling case. I call this the civil rights moment for the city of Danville. It's much like what we saw in Ferguson, Missouri. If we don't get a handle on this now, I want to make this clear. Based on the volume of stops that are occurring in Danville, there's going to be a fatality sooner or later. It's going to be on the side of law enforcement or it's going to be a private citizen. And when it's a private citizen, what law enforcement communities tend to do is they try to find everything they can about that individual so that they can assure the public that they did everything correct and it was the fault of the private individual. If it's a law enforcement official that ends up being killed by a driver because of the volume of stops that are occurring in our community, they're going to make this person the hero, and they're going to end up making sure that the community understands that this law enforcement official was doing everything he could in order to do his work for the community, to keep the community safe. And again, what we know is that traffic stops are not adding any value to public safety in communities across the country.
Lloyd Randall is a longtime resident of Danville, Illinois. He's been active in civic life there for 5 decades. And he has he is also a longtime listener of the 21st Show. Lloyd, thank you so much for being part of our community and joining us today to talk about this important issue.
Thank you, Brian. I enjoyed being a part of the show.
Let me mention all the ways you can get in touch with us, as Lloyd did, if you have suggestions for things you think we should be talking about here. We have an email address, talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. We also have a voicemail line. You heard Lloyd's message at the top of the show, and that is 217-300-2121. Once again, 217-300-2121. We're going to continue talking about traffic stops and take a broader look statewide. We'll be talking with a reporter who has been covering the issue in Danville for our home station, Illinois Public Media, as well as Kadeen Bennett, who is Director of Advocacy and Intergovernmental Affairs at the ACLU of Illinois, which has, a statewide perspective on this issue. If you want to join us today, live on air, 800-222-9455 is the number. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show.
Support for the 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Art Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are going to continue talking about traffic disparities in Danville and across Illinois. For this next part of our program, I want to bring on two different guests. Piotr Fetchuk is a reporter in the Illinois Student Newsroom. He's been investigating this issue for our home station, Illinois Public Media. Piotr, welcome to the 21st Show.
Nice to meet you, Brian.
Also with us, Kadeen Bennett is Director of Advocacy and Intergovernmental Affairs at the ACLU of Illinois. Kadeen, welcome back to the show to you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Piotr, I'm going to start with you. What led you to covering this story?
I guess I was just picking up reporting that our other students here have been doing, and I guess this one really kind of sparked my interest because, you know, Lloyd's been kind of ringing the bell on this for about a decade now. And I guess that kind of like human element of, you know, we have an issue and no one's been addressing it, I think it's just been really interesting.
Yeah. How does Danville compare with other parts of Illinois, as you've reported?
You know, we kind of, honestly, we see a lot of the same patterns in Danville as we do the rest of Illinois. Over the past decade or so, there have been like fewer traffic stops. And I guess of that, there have been fewer white traffic stops.
Mm.
But so you see, I guess when you were talking previously about the number of, or the rate of black drivers like increasing over the years, it hasn't been that black drivers have been getting stopped more often. It's just like everyone else has been getting stopped less often, and kind of like that number of African American drivers that have been stopped, it's kind of just remained consistent over the years.
Oh, that's fascinating. Kadeen Bennett, I'm going to bring you in now. Maybe you can just pick up on that. What are you seeing statewide in the numbers?
I mean, I think since this legislation became law, what we continue to see is a disproportionate amount of African-American drivers are stopped compared to their white counterparts. And I think over the years, when it first came out, I think it was really helpful for folks who have felt like they've been overly surveilled and overly stopped in their communities. And there was actually data that showed what they were saying was real. And I think over the years, the higher people have experienced higher frustration because the data shows something that's similar, but nothing for many of them, it feels like nothing has changed. And that's been one of the things that I visited Danville a couple of times. You can feel the frustration of the people in the community who are saying we are being stopped more than our white counterparts. And instead of having conversations with their local law enforcement to really understand where people are coming from, they're met with defensiveness. So, I mean, to some degree, it doesn't matter if you have data every year, but if the data says the same thing and there are no changes that are being met, then you could just imagine the frustration that folks are experiencing. What's the point of the data? I think part of that has to do with how law enforcement uses this data. It could be seen as a negative, but it could actually also be a positive in that it opens the opportunity for real conversations with the folks who are living in their communities. So, you know, some of the things that I think we want law enforcement to think about when they get the data is, are they reviewing the analyzed data? Are they sharing it with their officers? What actions are they taking in response to the findings in the report each year? And then what does the data tell them? Like, are there any red flags when they assess the data? Are the numbers what they expected? And do they see anything that's concerning in the disparities reflected in the data? And what steps are they willing to or have they taken to address racial disparities? And then having conversations with people in the community. If the community folks are saying, you know, and Lloyd gave examples where folks can give their perspective of being overly stopped, that's an opportunity to really talk through those issues and figure out what alternatives they can consider so that they're actually working with community so that all people feel safe, because a lot of people don't feel safe when they're stopped over and over again by law enforcement. And, you know, Lloyd mentioned some of those pretextual stops, but that does not create a space of building trust between community and law enforcement folks.
Kadeem, what do you understand is or are some of the reasons behind these disparities?
I mean, I think, where do I start? I think some of the issues that people experience is that depending on where you live in a community, so if you live in a more working class or poor area versus a wealthy area, your community ends up being more surveilled than there are people who live in more wealthy areas. If you have lots of folks of color, lots of Black folks who are living in areas that aren't as affluent, then they are more surveilled. And the surveillance beyond things like automatic license plate readers, but police more likely to be in those areas. Why you stop people? If somebody is didn't make a full stop at a stop sign, are communities of color more likely to be stopped for that reason? And then the pretextual reason. So there might be, you know, we're trying to solve crime, so let's go to this community where we're getting calls of crime and we're going to find reasons to stop people more than you otherwise with in a different and in a more affluent neighborhood.
What can you say? I mean, if somebody out there is listening and says, you know, is it possible that, you know, Black drivers are committing traffic violations more often? What would you say to them?
It could be possible, but I think that's where really looking at the data and digging through the why of it. So I think when we think about the data that comes back, I think it just raises the opportunity to ask those questions. Okay, so are we deploying resources in the same way? Is one community more targeted than the other? I know that in one part of the city, there were older folks who were calling about a particular community, part of a community, versus older folks in other communities don't call to have like law enforcement at particular intersections. I think I think that is where having the conversations and like real conversations, not just sitting and hearing what the folks of Danville were saying, but really walking through with them. Okay, so here's the data that we are seeing. Here's why we think it is accurate. Folks are able to give their version of why they don't think it's accurate. And I think coming up with community solutions. At the end of the day, we want everyone to feel safe. And right now there are people, especially African-American people living in different communities where they're feeling overly targeted. And then there, I think it's also how we think about why we're stopping people. Like, you know, are we stopping people for a broken taillight? Is that the best use of time and resources? And if we're doing that, is that an opportunity to then ask for a consent search or some kind of reasoning to hold people longer, looking for things that they otherwise wouldn't, but for that stop? And again, is it happening in a way that is reflective of the interactions with all members of the community.
Pyotr Fedchuk, you've been, again, reporting on this for the Illinois Student Newsroom. I know you talk with Lloyd, whom we heard from at the top of the show, and others in Danville who've been affected by this. Beyond what we've heard so far, what else can you tell us about what they've said?
I mean, I guess, I mean, part of it's just the unease of, I guess, just commuting, getting around. Am I going to get stopped today, right? Like, just because I'm in a truck or a van, does that, like, make me more likely to be pulled over is kind of just what I've heard a lot of the time. But I guess another aspect of it has been maybe some sort of fear about speaking up.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think to that point, if I could,
please,
begin, Brian, I think some of what I heard when I was in Danville is just, I think, to the point of fear. It's like parents are fearful if their, you know, kids are going somewhere in a car with other friends, what's going to happen? Are they going to get a call that their, you know, child was, the car was pulled over, their child's on the side of the street being handcuffed for something that they did not do wrong? Are they, I've heard of a minister who was going to see somebody in his church, coming home and being trailed the whole way home, even though he's done nothing wrong. I think that kind of fear of surveillance when folks are feel like we're not doing anything wrong and we're being stopped or we're being followed, I think that's some of the unease that exists for some of the people in Danville. And I think to the point of, if you live in a smaller community, just generally, and you're speaking out against law enforcement, that can feel like there's a target on your back. And what people want, I mean, at the end of the day, from what I, and Lloyd shared this, he wants a space where there are folks who are coming together to look at the data that is Danville specific and really be able to get some rationale for it. You know, if someone is saying, if members of the community are able to say, here are some examples of stops that should not have happened, creating a space where law enforcement can explain, they can hear from the citizens about their perspective, and then do an assessment of, is this working as it is meant to be, in a way that is reflect it, that helps the folks of Danville trust the data. And it also can be an opportunity from the Danville Police Department to think about, are there better ways to collect or analyze or think about using the data? And I would say that there are law enforcement entities that they get this information, and it is a helpful training tool for them. It allows them to, if they get reports about a stop that you know, somebody in the community raised concerns about, they look at the body cam. They sometimes do their own independent, just getting a random collection of body camera footage to make sure that their officers are complying with the law. So there are tools and techniques that are able to be done in a way that can result in, again, building that level of mutual understanding and community trust.
Kadeem, what communities are doing this right?
I know that there are communities that are doing it right. I don't want to name any. I don't have a list in front of me, but
sure,
I don't
mean to put you on the spot,
yeah,
but I mean, I guess,
yeah,
what are the things you would see in a community that is doing this right, I guess?
It is, when the data comes out, having open conversations with members of their community. I mean, one example I can point to is in Springfield, we have a group of folks there who each year when the data comes out, they set up an appointment with their local Springfield Police Department and talk about the data. Here's what we've seen. Here's our concerns. Can you explain to us what this looks like? The Springfield Police Department, earlier this year, initiated this lights out program where if somebody is doesn't have their taillight, they don't stop them just for not having the taillight, but if there is some other violation, they will, when they make that stop, they would offer to give them a coupon so that they're able to fix their taillight. So it's not a system that now requires them to stop everybody with a broken taillight, but if there is a stop that's more serious, they're able to then offer that that resource as well. And then they're doing a pilot around consent searches where they're only they're not going to do a consent search if there is no reasonable suspicion that a criminal offense is present. So I think that's another thing that communities are able to do.
Yikes. I just happened to look up Springfield. Well, I didn't happen to. I did when you mentioned them. 46% of traffic stops are Black, 50% white, but 16% of the benchmark population is Black.
Yep.
So I guess not exactly a shining example.
It is not, but I think the example I gave is that the first step is having those conversations and then taking steps to try to make changes. I think, and even in that it's a process, but there are some law enforcement entities that aren't even willing to engage in conversations with communities. So I use Springfield as an example of, they're a place that they're talking to people in the community. They've rolled out two things. We're yet to see how it plays out. But I think taking the step of banning consent searches without reasonable suspicion and the Lights Out program, we will see in the next report. So this just happened this year, what that looks like.
We're coming to the end of our time together. I do want to mention again that we did invite the police chief and the mayor in Danville to join us today on the program. Did not hear back. Lloyd compared this to Ferguson. And of course, very few people in America had heard of Ferguson until Michael Brown was shot and killed by the police. And Lloyd says that's what he's worried about. You know, could be the ultimate direction that things are heading in Danville. What do you think of that comparison?
I mean, I leave it to folks who are living there to talk about how they're feeling. I do feel that folks are feeling a high level of suspicion, of frustration when they keep saying, please engage with us in this way as we're talking about your practices and how they're affecting us. And I think it is not too much to ask for the city of Danville to have the kind of task force that Lloyd is asking for. And at the end of the day, how does that hurt anything? You know, you're responding to a need that a community is asking for, and they've been asking for quite a long time. And I think the best way to engage is to do it, as opposed to hiding behind numbers and not listening to the people who are directly impacted.
Are there any big picture changes the ACLU of Illinois is looking for with regard to, again, reminding listeners, this all started with a state senator named Barack Obama, whatever happened to that guy, who passed the law that created this study. How is it going, right? That's how it started. How's it going?
Yeah, I think there are some things that we would want. One would be to end pretextual stops. We would want to restrict consent searches. We would want to restrict stops for lower level violations like the broken taillight, you know, failing to turn on lights when you're parked in the road at night, like those kinds of low level things. And then one of the things that we also see is just wanting to make sure that folks are reporting the data. In 2024, I think it was 78%. There was only 78% of complete reporting by all law enforcement entities, and that complete reporting needs to happen every year. And if people aren't reporting, there should be some, if law enforcement agencies aren't reporting, there should be some penalties in place. We know that big departments, smaller departments are reporting. I think that should be something that happens across the board.
Kadeen Bennett is Director of Advocacy and Intergovernmental Affairs at the ACLU of Illinois. We also spoke with Piotr Fetchuk, a reporter in the Illinois Student Newsroom. Thank you both for joining us today on The 21st Show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about fonts. Graphic design is my passion. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.